This is The Guardian. I'm Regid Ahmed, coming to you from Gadigal land, and this is The Full Story.
Everywhere you go, you see his face, plastered on billboards and even on COVID vaccine certificates, creating an image of a prime minister that is larger than life.
There is no leader within light years who comes close to Prime Minister Modi.
Prime Minister Narendra Modi is enormously popular across parts of India. He's been in power for 10 years, and he and the BJP are again the clear frontrunners in the country's parliamentary elections.
Sathiyo, ye aapka utsaah, ye aapka prem, mere sar aankhon par.
And while Modi has a lot of supporters in India and among world leaders, critics have long been warning of an eroding of rights and freedoms in the country. Some even say if Modi wins again, it could trigger profound change for democracy in India. Today, what could another 5 years of Narendra Modi mean for India and the world? It's Wednesday, the 8th of May.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
First of all, I just want to start with getting a sense of India's parliamentary elections and why it's such a mammoth undertaking for this kind of election.
You know, India is a country of 1.4 billion people. This is the world's largest electoral process. You know, we've got almost 1 billion people who will be voting in this election.
Hannah Ellis-Peterson is The Guardian's South Asia correspondent.
And, you know, India over 75 years has always been a democracy. It's always had democratic elections. And it's been a real point of pride for the country. And in order to make sure that everyone can vote in this country, which is, you know, it spans deserts and mountains and extraordinarily remote rural parts of the country, it takes a very long time. And so in order to make sure everyone can vote, they span the election over 6 weeks and they do it in phases. So this time they'll be doing it in seven phases. So it started in mid-April. It will go on till the beginning of June.
And there's some fairly extraordinary lengths that have to be gone to get these polling booths to high peaks and to all these remote areas. Can you tell me about that?
Well, yeah. So India votes on electronic voting machines, and you've got over 15 million officers who are tasked with setting these up. So, you know, they take these electronic machines on rafts down rivers. They climb up for 3 to 4 days up to mountaintops to, you know, remote polling stations, which have only, you know, 10 to 15 people living in there. But by law, people should only have to travel a certain amount of distance to go to a polling station. So it's to make sure that people don't have to spend 2 days walking to vote. So, you know, these election officers, you know, they will basically go on these kind of mammoth treks, essentially, to bring all the polling stations, to bring the polling officers, to bring the police officers. You know, you have these incredible photos of, you know, polling officers with these machines strapped onto their backs, scaling up high mountains to go up into places like Himachal Pradesh. You know, they take them on camels, they take them on elephants. You know, it's an incredible exercise just sort of on a logistics basis.
It certainly sounds it. And it sounds like India takes this exercise very seriously. In terms of Prime Minister Narendra Modi and his BJP party, they're seeking to win this election. Modi is seeking to have a third term, and he is hugely popular in India, certainly in some parts. Can you, first of all, give us a sense of the positives of the way his supporters have said they've influenced India for the good?
Sure. So, you know, Modi has been in power since 2014 over the past decade, and it's been, you know, a big decade of change for India in terms of kind of development and progress. And, you know, Modi has certainly had a huge influence on the country. Modi's politics, he subscribes to Hindu nationalist politics. So he has very much pushed forward this idea of kind of India as a Hindu country. And a lot of what his government has done has brought in this kind of focus on religion, this kind of returning India to this idea of a kind of former civilizational great Hindu nation. A lot of people talk about a kind of sense of national pride that Modi has instilled in them. This is very important. People feel like India is finally being recognized as a world power. You know, you've got Biden, you've got Macron, you've got Rishi Sunak, you've got the Australian Prime Minister. Everyone wants to, you know, have a piece of India. Everyone wants to be friends with Modi.
Friends, I want you to give a big Australian welcome to my dear friend. Prime Minister Modi is the boss.
This idea of India as kind of having come up on the world global stage is a very big part of his popularity.
Mm-hmm.
I think the crucial point here is Modi's also just on his own, a very kind of charismatic. There is this cult of personality that's built up around him, which he spent a very long time curating. And so people kind of see him, even if people don't connect to the BJP's politics, which can be seen as quite right wing. People don't necessarily believe that India should be a Hindu nation, but they will still vote for Modi.
I mean, Modi has been described as having a messianic spell upon his supporters.
Well, it's true. You know, I've been out, I spent the past kind of month or so out on the campaign trail, and that has included going to several Modi rallies. And there is this kind of feverish response to him. People see him as an almost godlike figure. You know, there is this kind of increasing perception of him as not only as a kind of political leader, but also as a religious leader. And the messaging he gives is something that people, you know, they want to hear this. He tells people what they want to hear. There is a kind of populist element to what he speaks about. You know, the evoking of religion and majoritarian politics also really appeals to the masses. But, you know, he's managed somehow to appeal to the kind of urban elite, but also, you know, the kind of lower caste, poorer rural worker who also feels like Modi has made them feel important. He's made them feel part of India. And there is this kind of cult of personality and almost godlike status that has been built up around him, which has, you know, been curated through the media, which his government has successfully kind of managed to bring under their control. You very rarely see any anti-Modi content on, you know, any media. So, you know, if people are only reading positive things, then they will probably only think positive things.
I find his method of communication really interesting. He doesn't give solo news conferences since becoming prime minister, but he has his own radio show.
Yes, I mean, it's all very carefully curated. Mm. He has this kind of this radio show where he talks to listeners, but none of this gives any accountability back. People aren't able to ask him questions. When he does interviews, it's only with extraordinarily favourable media who, you know, ask very sycophantic questions and enable him to talk very gushingly about the achievements of his government. And so this idea of kind of answering tough questions in a press conference, he's never done that in 10 years. You know, he'll do an interview with international media, for example. He's done very few, but actually that interview will be a series of written questions that are submitted before. His press office send a series of written responses back. And then, you know, there's some photos taken with Modi. Et voila, that's the interview. It's actually just a press release. And so this idea of kind of any accountability of him being put on the spot, being asked tough questions about, you know, anything to do with his government, that doesn't happen.
You're already hinting at this, Hannah. Despite the fact that Modi is incredibly popular in some parts of the country, there are the critics out there. What have been some of the negative impacts of his policies, especially when it comes to minority groups?
One of the kind of crowning glories of India when it first was established was this constitution that it has, which enshrines India as a secular nation. And secular in India doesn't mean what it means in the West. Secular means kind of equality for all religions. And so it's a recognition that India is a country of so many different faiths and they need to be treated equally under the law.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that has sort of held India together, you know, a country of so many faiths and cultures and religions and languages. It's almost a kind of an unfathomable mass that should never have worked as a country, but has and has maintained, you know, has been a cohesive country in a way that a lot of post-colonial states failed. India succeeded. Many people credit its very strong constitution as a result of that. Since Modi came in, Hindu nationalism is seen to kind of erode at the foundations of India as a secular country, increasingly bringing Hinduism into politics and, you know, at the cost of the minorities, particularly India's 200 million Muslims, which is, you know, the second largest population of Muslims in the world. And, you know, the way in which the government has pushed what is seen as a kind of Hindu first agenda, whether or not that's passing laws which makes religion on the basis of ethnicity, of your ability to get citizenship in India, whether or not that's passing laws based on a variety of kind of unsubstantiated Islamophobic conspiracies. And then on a kind of more societal level, you know, because of this persecution that's happened, this increased number of Islamophobic comments that are made by politicians, it's, you know, justified rising Islamophobia, rising persecution of Muslims onto the ground. So you've got, you know, Muslims being lynched, you've got mosques being demolished, you've got Muslims increasingly being, you know, pushed out of different aspects of society, unable to get jobs, unable to rent homes, and, you know, a kind of just normalized hatred that has existed and permeated society on the ground against the Muslim minority. So that's been one issue. And then the other is kind of an erosion of what people call kind of democratic norms, you know, increasing authoritarianism that's happened under the Modi government, whether or not that's suppression of the media, whether or not that's the undermining of various independent institutions which used to hold the government to account. The fact that the BJP government has such an overwhelming majority in parliament means that the parliament is no longer a place to hold them to account. The judiciary also, which has always been a very strong bastion of democracy in India, so much is held up through the courts, has also been put under vast amounts of pressure. So the kind of the politics has seeped into almost every aspect of society. And, you know, activists have been arrested, journalists have been arrested and persecuted, you know, foreign organizations, NGOs who are human rights organizations, you know, they've been kicked out of the country. Amnesty, Greenpeace, you know, they're not here anymore because of, you know, government pressure, because this government really struggles and pushes back against anyone who criticizes, whether or not that's a single person who's a journalist, whether or not it's a huge, vast, multinational human rights organization.
And what do they say to the accusations of this creeping authoritarianism and this erosion of democracy?
Well, they mostly claim it's kind of, you know, outside influences. You know, they accuse foreign governments of trying to undermine India as it's trying to grow. You know, they talk a lot about foreign interference, this idea that, you know, people don't want India to be a great country. That's why they've managed to kind of target foreign organizations, you know, foreign media, you know, foreign activists. So, you know, and then they just say it's, you know, pushing India on a trajectory of growth, of kind of economic development and of equality, and, you know, is celebrating India's historical past and freeing it from a kind of cloak of colonial oppression that they've been dealing with.
Where is the opposition in all of this? I mean, is a Modi BJP win a foregone conclusion, or is there some semblance of a challenge there in this election?
It's a really important question, because Modi is popular, but there is a, but he's not 100% popular. And there is an enormous amount of pushback against his politics, and particularly actually more to do with his economic policies. You know, there is still terrible unemployment issues. There is still poverty. Rising inflation has been a huge issue in terms of people's just everyday life costs, while wages have remained stagnant. And so while his government has pushed this narrative that, you know, poverty has fallen to historic lows, on the ground, that isn't necessarily the picture. But what you've got is an opposition that is in chaos, essentially, that is weak, that lacks leadership. So the main opposition party is the Congress Party. They're a party that ruled India when it first became independent in 1947. They were, in fact, a big part of the fight for independence. And the first, India's first prime minister, Nehru, was from Congress. So it was a giant of India's political history for decades. But since the BJP came to power in 2014, the party has been in quite rapid decline. They were accused of huge amounts of corruption, a huge amount of elitism. They failed to present a viable candidate who people feel is an actual alternative to Modi. And so whilst in this election, Congress, along with 26 other opposition parties, came together in a coalition to basically try and oust the BJP government, and they kind of have really failed to come together cohesively across the country.
Mm.
You know, the opposition has their weaknesses, but they've also come under pretty sustained attack by the BJP government over the past 10 years. You know, the BJP government has used so many different state resources, or has been accused of using so many different state resources to go after the opposition. So that's using kind of particularly investigation agencies to target political leaders, to investigate them for various tax crimes, money laundering crimes.
What we are being told is that this entire area will be cordoned off before Arvind Kejriwal can be taken out, you know, from his residence.
The most stark example was the arrest of the Delhi chief minister, Arvind Kejriwal, who was arrested just a month before the election.
This will have wide-ranging ramifications for the politics of Delhi. Truly, you know, a turning point for the politics of Delhi, with Arvind Kejriwal being arrested there, traffic being diverted, police,
He's remained in jail. And he is one of the leaders of one of the opposition parties in the coalition. And, you know, he's been arrested as part of a kind of ongoing investigation, which is seen as a kind of politically motivated investigation by an agency under the government's control. Congress say that their accounts have been frozen by the BJP government. So, you know, it's certainly not what they describe as a level playing field in this election. And so ultimately, when you talk to people on the ground, sometimes they'll say, look, you know, Modi hasn't done anything for me. Everything is more expensive. But, you know, who else am I going to vote for? And so the kind of failures and weaknesses of the opposition have also been a very big part of why Modi is seen to be so sure to win this election.
Next, will another Modi term threaten the future of democracy in India?
Hey, Jane Lee here with a quick note about The Guardian. As you probably know, Guardian Australia's journalism is editorially independent, which means we set our own agenda. We don't have a billionaire owner, we don't answer to shareholders, so we're free from commercial bias. And this independence matters because it means we're able to challenge the powerful and hold them to account. Unlike many news organisations, we haven't put up a paywall. We chose a model that means our reporting is open to everyone and funded by our readers and listeners who can afford to pay. Every contribution, whether big or small, counts. So if you're able to support us, head to theguardian.com/support/fullstory. There's also a link on the full story page. Thanks.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Should Modi and the BJP win again, are we going to see business as usual in a third term, or could we see some sort of profound change in India that we haven't seen before?
I mean, it really depends. It's interesting, we know we all talk about, and we've all written these pieces about how Modi is almost kind of a dead cert to win and very guaranteed. But it's interesting, as the election has played out, he doesn't necessarily look as strong as maybe we thought he was. There is a certain sense of desperation. And you see this on the campaign trail because he started to talk more and more about Muslims.
Just days into India's elections, Prime Minister Narendra Modi has caused controversy. Addressing supporters in Rajasthan state, he referred to Muslims as infiltrators, saying if the opposition Congress party came to power again, Muslims would have first rights to India's assets.
And as soon as he kind of reverts to this, you know, very strong, polarizing religious narrative, it's a sense often of kind of the desperation of the campaign. You know, he's not talking about economics, he's not talking about jobs, he's talking about religion, which is the most kind of emotive issue on the campaign trail. And some people are taking it as a sign that they're a little bit worried that they haven't kind of got the narrative. He's almost sure to win, but whether or not he will win the same kind of majority that he won last time is increasingly within question. The opposition has spoken a lot about concerns that if the Modi government get a huge majority, they will try and change the constitution and remove some of these, you know, ideas of enshrining India as a secular country. Very important to say that the BJP has flat out denied this, particularly Modi. And then some people say, well, maybe they don't even need to change the constitution. They can just do what they want to do anyway.
Are people on the ground expressing a lot of fear about a possible third term for Modi and the BJP?
Well, it really depends who you speak to. I mean, we find fear within like the Muslim communities, especially the ones that I speak to who have directly been impacted by violence. I did some reporting in the state of Uttarakhand, where there was recently the state government has been pursuing various policies which are seen to directly target Muslims. And one of them was the demolition of a mosque and madrasa. And, you know, there were some protests by local Muslims. The police then hit back and kind of violence erupted. 5 Muslims were shot dead by the police. And in that community, they were terrified of what a Modi third term means because they felt like, you know, they couldn't go to the police, they couldn't go to the government, they felt like they were completely unprotected and that, you know, when this violence breaks out, they're completely left on their own. The state doesn't protect them in any measure. Similarly, when you speak to people who work in kind of activist communities, human rights, you know, the organizations that they're working for, the think tanks, you know, it's very highly esteemed think tanks have had to shut down or kind of limit their operations because, you know, the government has gone after them. So in those circles, you know, there is a fear, there is a worry, you know, the trajectory of India is something that is of great concern to them. But on the streets, you know, people feel very proud of Modi. They feel very much like he's made them feel proud to be Indian. People are proud to vote for him. I did some vox popping in a central area of Delhi around me, and I didn't meet a single person who wasn't voting for Modi for various reasons. Some simply because they said there just isn't anyone else to vote for. Some who very proudly, you know, wanted to talk about what they felt Modi had done for the country. So it's a real mix, but I would say that, you know, overall, the mood, the feeling is that, you know, Modi will, and I think that will set India on a kind of continued path of what we've seen for the past 2 terms of Modi.
You started off by telling us about Modi being quite a figure on the international stage. If Modi wins another term, what do you think that means? Do you think other world leaders will kind of welcome it because it maintains some sense of stability? Or is there this fear amongst the global community of further decline in what some would argue democratic values?
So the interesting thing is the reason that everyone is courting India right now is because it's seen as a kind of buffer to China, a vital buffer to China, to China's growing influence. Particularly the US see it as extraordinarily important. And so that's one reason. And that almost makes India sort of indispensable and gives it a huge kind of very strong position. So countries like the US, countries like Australia, countries like the UK are willing to turn a blind eye to what's happening in India, particularly in terms of kind of erosion of democracy, etc., because, you know, they need India. They need India on side, and it's actually much worse for them to not have India on side. You know, India has a good relationship with Russia. India has always kind of played its own game in terms of its international allegiances. It's also, you know, 1.4 billion people, a huge growing economy. We need India on side for various environmental policies. There's so many reasons that, you know, the global community needs India. And that has meant that these countries are queuing up to sign pacts, sign deals, you know, get India on side, trade deals. And I think it's not necessarily about Modi. He certainly kind of pushed this. I mean, in India, people talk about, you know, this being Modi's doing, but I think it's more a kind of matter of geopolitical convenience. But I don't see that changing anytime soon. You know, you see some pushback, you know, some of these governments will say something when the Modi government does something that's seen as particularly egregious. But in general, I don't think it's had much of an impact. And if anything, you know, I think a Modi third term would be quite convenient for a lot of these leaders. They spent a lot of time building up their relationships with him. Modi's very proud of those relationships. But, you know, you've also got issues of India doing things like being accused of, you know, killing citizens in foreign countries. You know, they're accused of killing a Sikh activist in Canada. They're accused of attempting to kill a Sikh activist in America. They're accused of bumping off, you know, dozens of people in Pakistan. And those are the kinds of things that make it more difficult, because India then is perceived as more of a kind of rogue nation. But all of these countries also have a long history of turning a blind eye to countries that commit these kinds of human rights abuses, Saudi Arabia being a very good example. So it's hard to say whether or not there is a red line here in terms of how Western countries are willing to kind of engage with India.
The election is ongoing. We're roughly at the halfway mark. What are we going to see happen in the next 3 weeks, and when will we get some results?
So there's still five more phases of voting that needs to happen in increasingly hot temperatures. India's already going through a heat wave, so people are going to have to be voting out in sort of 45 degree heat as it gets towards the end of May. So the final phase of voting is on the 2nd of June, and then all the results are counted together on the 4th of June, and we should get a result on that day.
Hannah, thank you so much for speaking to us from Delhi.
Thank you so much.
That was Hannah Ellis-Peterson. You can find more of Hannah's work on theguardian.com, and we've linked to some of Hannah's latest pieces on the Full Story website. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Alison Chan, sound design and mixing by Joe Koning. The executive producer is Miles Martignoni and Hannah Parks. If you liked this episode, don't forget to subscribe or follow Full Story wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also leave a review. I'm Regid Ahmed. Thanks for listening.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.